And we're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is June 18th, 2015. We have a huge, huge agenda today, and so we're going to go a little bit of out of order in order to maximize our time. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 800. Mr. Co-Chair, it's great having you here.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chairman and Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, and Member Representative Comp. I'm here today on a bill that you will not find above the fold in the Oregonian.
I like that kind of bill.
It's actually, but I think, a very important bill. So I want to thank you here for hearing this today, and I hope that you move it out today to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. It's actually on a very serious subject. If I can recall a little bit of history, many of you went through that history. In 2002, we had five special sessions. We had actually no reserves. The only reserves we really had were the accrued and future tobacco master settlement dollars. In 2002, the Education Stability Fund was established through a vote of the people. In 2007, the legislature established the Rainy Day Fund. In 2009, 11 biennium, we nearly completely depleted those funds, almost down to literally pocket change. Well, about $15 million, but pocket change compared to the state budget. In 2011-13, because we faced about a $3.5 billion shortfall in terms of current service level related to how much revenue that we had, we basically took the funds that were going to go into both of those funds and took them in one pocket and took them out the other. So at the end of that biennium, we had a grand total of just under $70 million in reserves. Fortunately, in 2013 and 2015, we kept our hands off of the mechanisms largely, and so we had just under, well, we will have just under $400 million in those reserves combined at the end of this biennium that we're currently in. And if we keep our hands off those dollars in the coming biennium, we may even be able to do a little bit better than this, but if we kept the 1%, and that went into the General Purpose Reserve Fund, along with what normally would go into the Education Stability Fund, plus the others, we would probably be in about the $750 million range in reserves. We may be able to actually do a little bit better than that because the co-chairs are trying to put more in reserves, and I'm hoping we'll be above $800 million. The future, think about it this way. At the end of the 2017 biennium, we will have maybe $800 million. 2017 is almost 10 years since the beginning of the Great Recession. Will we have a downturn before then? No one knows. Our reserves in 20 will be less than 4% of our probable 2017-19 budget. Will we be prepared or will we not be prepared? I think right now we would not be prepared. The task force that's before you is a legislative task force. I actually believe in the legislature, so the task force is actually made up of legislators and not by just a group of outside people who may not understand the underworkings of state government. It's bicameral. It's bipartisan. You may notice from the, if you look at the actual bill, you will see that the sponsors of the bill are the two co-chairs of Ways and Means, the chair of the House Revenue Committee, the chair of the equivalent Senate Revenue Committee, the Republican vice chairs of the Ways and Means Committee, and the Republican vice chairs of both revenue committees. So I don't think you can get a much more bipartisan bill than that. You'll also find in your documentation on OLAS a letter from the Pew Foundation, which has offered its assistance in any way they can to assist the work of the task force, and the task force will be staffed by LFO and legislative revenue. I think there are a lot of questions that we need to have answers for. I think most of us would answer no to the first one. Are the reserve funds adequate, or how inadequate are they? This is sort of the second question. Do they correlate well to the volatility of our revenue streams? Have we used them appropriately since their creation? I think that's a significant issue. Mm-hmm. And now since we have a history of this, it would be good to have that debriefing on how we've used them before we face the inevitability of having to use them in the future. Are the triggers, transfers, and limits placed on the reserves appropriate? Should we expand banning current dedications to the reserve funds? These are just a few of the many questions that I believe need to be answered, and should be answered in this task force and brought back to the 2017 legislative session. That's why I ask for your support of SB 800 and urge you to send it to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the co-chair, Senator?
Thank you. Senator Devlin, whenever some of us who are cynical see a proposal like this, we wonder if this is a method to recommend repurposing of certain tax refunds.
I don't think it's actually, Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, I don't believe its purpose is that. I think its purpose is more to look at our current reserve funds, whether we're managing them appropriately, whether we're using them appropriately, whether we should be dedicating some additional proceeds to them. I think we know that there is a Senate bill and a House bill trying to do something like that this time. I would submit to you, though, that the research really hasn't been done in terms of what's the best way to do this. Now, I can tell you, Senator Whitsitt, it is clear to me, this is my 19th year in this body, anything that you would fear that's going to be proposed will be proposed in a future session.
Do you have a follow-up, Senator?
Just shortly. There was a successful initiative petition that altered the or amended the Oregon Constitution to repurpose the corporate income tax kicker to the general fund for the purpose of education. But that most likely has not been, even though the money has will flow into the, will not have to be refunded, the money really has not been used for that purpose in the current budget. That's my concern, and I just wanted to put it on the record. I will support the bill, but I'm always concerned that sometimes the purpose is to raise more revenue to put it into reserve funds so that we can spend it.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I understand your concerns. I think it's why it's important whether you're writing legislation for in this building or if you're proposing an initiative out there, you should be careful in what you're drafting, because I'm not speaking to you from the perspective of how most people view the co-chairs of Ways and Means. But if you just put money into the general fund, I can tell you that it all went to K-12. because there's no back door. The back door isn't closed on this.
Senator Johnson.
Well, I'm very supportive of this. I think I'm going to join the cynical crowd and ask you a cynical question. Yesterday, we had a long go at it in another committee meeting about whether or not to take money that actually emanates from the Education Stability Fund into the Oregon Growth Board and allow it to be spent in other jurisdictions. And you and I have talked about this. We went round and round and round about it. The point of the story is that we're nuancing how that money can be spent, and the long daggers came out on both sides. And so you're proposing a task force that's going to do some significant study and hopefully yield a result that better informs policymakers. My question for you is, how optimistic are you that you can effectuate changes? Let's assume that the deliberations of this task force yield a recommendation that, let me use the Oregon Growth Board money that comes from the Stability Fund, is not an appropriate use, that we shouldn't be spending it in venture capital activities. What do you think the odds are that we can unwind any of the stuff that we have already done that may not be prudent fiscal policy?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm to some degree not known as an optimist.
I would concur.
But I would tell you that I think the chances are higher if we actually do the work than it is without the work. One of the things that I have a concern with in terms of that account, I'm trying to be careful here not to actually lose support for the measure I have before me, is what have our rates of return been on our investments there? Part of the difficulty in my mind with the Education Stability Fund, and it was part of actually getting it passed, I'll have to admit that, part of it, the carve-outs from it are actually part of what actually helped it get passed, maybe not so much with the public, but passed in the legislative body to refer. is that the earnings do not stay with the fund. If the earnings stayed with the fund, it would grow at a much greater rate. You alluded to the issue about whether or not the growth fund should be allowed to invest outside of Oregon. Its initial purpose was actually to invest inside Oregon. I know that's more complex issue than it sounds, because I think you will hear from them that it limits what investments they can make.
Right.
I will just tell you from my knowledge of the returns that the Oregon Investment Council is able to achieve through the parties that they have invest state funds. If you're going to open the door for these investments outside of the state, I think it begs the question of whether these funds should actually be invested by the Oregon Investment Council to get greater returns from them, because they are actually part of, you know, theoretically, at least the earnings in this case at least it should be part of our plan in terms of building the reserves that we need. I will tell you that you see now, and I'm going on a little bit too long here, you've got a long meeting, you will see in each one of our revenue forecasts that comes out now that this used to not be the case a few years back. You will see estimates with what happens in relatively modest downturns in the economy. And even in the most modest downturn in those estimates, we're not prepared at this point.
So. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to get this thing moving along for you. Julie, do we have anyone else who wants to testify on this today? We're perfect. All right. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 800. We're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 800. Teresa, just very briefly, if you could just share with us an overview of what Senate Bill 800 does, so that way we know what we're voting on.
All right. Senate Bill 800 establishes the 10-member task force on reserve funds charged with reviewing existing provisions governing the Education Stability Fund and the Oregon Rainy Day Fund and the performance and adequacy of those funds. The task force is also directed to recommend changes to the Constitution, statutes, or management practices to enhance the effectiveness and performance of the funds. The task force is to be staffed by the Legislative Fiscal and the Legislative Revenue Offices and is required to report to the Legislative Assembly by September 16, 2016. The costs for the task force are anticipated to be absorbable, and there are no amendments to the measure.
Perfect. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 800 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Madam Co-Chair, move Senate Bill 800 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, colleagues, on the motion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none. So moved. Okay. I'm going to ask Co-Chair Devlin if he would carry this on the Senate Ways and Means and Senate floor. Representative Hurd, will you carry this on the House floor?
Want me to.
Perfect. All right. There we go. And seeing no other business before, so I'm going to close this one. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 800. Colleagues, we have a really long agenda today, and so I'm going to ask that we move very, very quickly through this so we can get our work done and report back to the co-chairs that we're an efficient committee. So with that said, I'm going to open up House Bill 5036, a work session on the Secretary of State. Steve, what do we need to know?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. We have recommendations for you for the budget for the Secretary of State and amendments that we are recommending for House Bill 5036 to implement those recommendations. We do have our work session report. I would like to go over this very briefly, so please, if you have any questions, slow me down so that I can help you understand the recommendations better. There are a number of recommendations. There were a number of package requests that the Secretary of State brought forward for your consideration. The first one was package 100, which is a request for new information technology positions. The request came forward for 10 positions to support the IT sections and programs in the Secretary of State. The LFO recommendation is to establish 7 permanent full-time positions and 2 limited duration full-time positions out of the 10 that was requested. We have additional information available, details as to certain positions being started with a short delay because to give the agency time to fill those positions. But we are recommending that. The cost of that recommendation is $533,529 general fund, $1,253,371 other funds, and it establishes nine positions, 8.68 FTE. Another request that came forward from the secretary was package 102 for Oregon business registry enhancements. It is a long-going policy of the agency to update the Oregon business registry and to improve its operations. They are requesting $624,000 of other funds to continue these ongoing efforts. And we are recommending approval of that. The source of these funds are business registration fees. The next recommendation is a recommendation that is contained in package 801, LFO analyst adjustments. In order to help balance the state budget, we are recommending that you reduce the general fund appropriation by $800,000 to the Administrative Services Division. This will be offset by an increase in other funds of the same amount. The impact of this is that there will not be this will not reduce total expenditures to the agency, but will use some accumulated other funds balances in lieu of general fund this biennium. We also have a package 802 revenue adjustments. This has no impact on the actual bill, which only governs the expenditure levels. But in order to true up the budget and to show revenues in the divisions where they are being realized, we do have a recommendation of package 802 to increase revenues that are being received by the Administrative Services Division.
All righty.
The next division is the Elections Division. There was a request for in package 201 federal funds expenditure limitation for modernizing the Oregon centralized voter registration system. Our recommendation is to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $488,710, which will be used for bug fixes in the, that's a technical term, in the OCVR system, and also for the testing of technology improvements to OCVR. We also have a recommendation, which is really technical in nature. It doesn't represent additional expenditures, but county payments for the OCVR system have not been included previously in the, haven't been included as expenditures in the Secretary of State's budget. Under this recommendation, those would continue, but in order to show those expenditures, we would actually ask you to increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $1,013,990. I do want to again reiterate that this doesn't represent additional money that the counties would be sending. It is just putting it into the budget to show its expenditures. Package 202 was a request for to update the Oregon Election System for Tracking and Reporting System, usually known as ORSTAR. ORSTAR is an in-house system, and the agency testified that they are planning to conduct a comprehensive review of the system in order to develop a plan for its long-term improvement. This plan may include outsourcing the system, which is currently in-house, and using other systems to replace its functions. We are recommending that you appropriate $285,000 in general fund for the agency's short-term plan to address ORSTAR improvements and maintenance needs for the 2016 election. The secretary may submit a detailed plan for long-term ORSTAR upgrades for beyond that time period and associate a request for funds to the 2016 session of the Legislative Assembly. So you may be expecting to see a report back. Finally, the last package for the Elections Division part of the agency is shown on page 10 of the work session report. That's package 841, which provides funding for implementation of House Bill 2177, the motor voter bill, which was passed by this legislature and signed into law earlier this session. What the bill does is it provides funds to both, provides authority to spend federal HAVA funds to the Secretary of State for the costs associated with implementing that program, and it provides general fund support for counties to help address the costs associated with maintaining larger voter registration rolls as a result of the measure. The LFO recommendation is to increase the general fund appropriation by $384,000 for the payments to the counties. I would note that the estimate, the fiscal impact, is expected to be twice that amount. We are, though, recommending that only half the amount be provided to the Secretary of State at this time for distribution to counties. At the same time, the other half would be appropriated to the Emergency Board as a special purpose appropriation, and those, the Emergency Board can release those funds after getting a report back from the Secretary of State on the effects of Measure 2177 on voter registration. The federal funds expenditure limitation would be $753,445, and the establishment of one limited duration project manager position to implement that. The next division of the agency is the audits division. The audits division had a request for additional auditors. We're recommending that you partially approve that request and approve the establishment of two new audit positions. This would form a audit team that would focus on IT issues. So the associated other funds expenditures for that are total $347,928. We also have package 802, part of a revenue, part of the revenue adjustments package, that as it affects the audits division. There are two divisions left in this agency. The next one is the archives division. The archives division had a request for an other funds expenditure limitation of $500,000 for the second phase of installing compact shelving in the archives building. Compact shelving basically doubles, my understanding, the storage capacity of the building. We do recommend $500,000 in other funds for this second stage of that project. There is also a small package 802 revenue adjustments for the archives division as well. We also have a technical adjustment to the archives division budget to correct the federal funds to the actual amount of federal funds that are expected to be available. There is a reduction in package 803 to retain $40,000 in federal funds expenditure limitation. Finally, the Corporation Division is the final division of the agency in terms of our report today. They had some requests. They came forward with a package 360 request for an other funds increase of $240,000 to pay credit card merchant fees. We are recommending that these are other funds. Package 361. Was a request of $192,000 for a subscription to application services for modernizing and expanding the online business services that the Corporation Division provides. This is in lieu of an earlier plan to actually produce or purchase or run a system in-house that would have cost $1.2 million. So the agency, instead of doing that, is moving to a software for service model, and the subscription cost would be $192,000 in a biennium, and we're recommending that. There's a request for some permanent financing for positions. One of the components of this request would be to add an additional full-time Program Analyst 3 position to the Office of Small Business Assistance. You received testimony as to the growth and activity in that office, and this does provide the additional position for them, as well as increasing a call center position from half-time to full-time and approving other reclassifications in the Corporation Division. Package 802 has some revenue adjustments. This is another package that has no impact on the bill, but on the budget, it does correctly show or update the amount of revenues we're expecting the agency to collect from business registry fees and other fees in the Corporation Division, and the amount of funds that we're expecting the agency to transfer to the general fund. Our final package is package 804. In package 804, we recommend that you approve, our recommendation is that you recommend to transfer $6.2 million of Corporation Division business registration fee revenue to the general fund for general purpose uses. The bill itself before you does not do that. On this recommendation, those changes would be included in the end of session program change bill. This is a distribution that has become, or transfer that has become, fairly regular since the automatic transfers that existed previously of business registration fee ending balances to the general fund was repealed. Since then, the legislature looks at the business registration fee balances, and those that are beyond what is necessary for the Secretary of State Corporation Division to maintain a reasonable ending balance, we recommend that you transfer that to the general fund. The actual fund transfer, the if you approve this amount, the action, we expect that the ending fund balance in the agency would remain at about $2.7 million, which is sufficient to finance approximately 3.4 months of operations.
We've got a question, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. That $6.2 million seems kind of familiar. I believe we had a bill earlier in this session that repealed a $6.2 million transfer from the Secretary of State's business division from for the purposes of reducing our general fund to avoid some of the kicker. So I think we should put that on the record as well.
Very good comment. This does complete the recommendations on the budget. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Colleagues, are there any questions on the budget? All righty.
I do have one other question.
Yes, Senator Whitsett.
Mr. Bender, we appear to have an increase of about $15 million in round figures of other fund expenditures. What is the source of those other funds, just generally speaking?
Generally speaking, the other funds are business registration fee revenues are the primary source. Another source is there are assessments that the Secretary of State levies on other state agencies. For example, the Archives Division, if you're talking the $500,000 for shelving.
I was speaking more to the increase.
Well, that would be business registration fee revenues would be the source of the funding the increases. Most of the increases in dollar terms are for the new positions for IT, and those are primarily being funded in
I guess my point would be that if that money wasn't being spent, this other funds wasn't being spent for that purposes, it would have likely been transferred to the general fund.
That is correct.
Thank you.
All righty. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations to House Bill 5036.
Madam Co-Chair moves the LFO recommendations to House Bill 5036. One thing I want to get on the record just very quickly is I'm supporting Package 100, which is establishing a number of positions for the Information Services Division. But I want to make it clear, it works really well right now, especially in the corporate division. And I would hope that as we look to make improvements, that we don't go so far that we make it difficult for the users who are currently using it. Because you folks have nailed it. You've got it down. It's working really well. So I just want to get that on the record. All righty. Colleagues, are there any other comments? Is there any questions or concerns, any opposition to the motion before us? Seeing none, so approved. Mr. Bender.
We have also included in your packet the key performance measures and proposed targets. You're not recommending any changes in the key performance measures. The agency reported on their key performance measures, and we are recommending that you retain them with the targets that we show are in the materials that we've distributed to you. Again, I'd be happy to answer any questions about KPMs.
Perfect. Madam Co-Chair, do you have a motion for me?
Mr. Chair, I move the key performance measures for House Bill 5036.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair moves the LFO recommendations on the key performance measures. Is there any additional conversation or discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so approved. Mr. Bender.
Finally, we recommend that you approve a budget for the Secretary of State of $9,511,939 general fund, $54,768,224 other funds, $6,251,910 federal funds, and 112 positions, or 110.71 full-time equivalents, and that House Bill 5036 be amended by the House Bill 5036-1 amendments to accomplish that.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the -1 amendments to House Bill 5036.
Madam Co-Chair moves adoption of the -1 amendments to House Bill 5036. Any comments? Any questions? Is there any opposition, colleagues? Seeing none. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5036 with to the committee with a due pass the full committee of Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended by the -1 amendment.
Perfect.
It's not on there.
we're going off script here.
But I got it right, I think.
Madam Co-Chair moves House Bill 5036 as amended to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah.
This has been a year of a lot of sudden and unexpected transitions around here, and I'd like to thank Mr. Taylor for his help in keeping things calm and steady. I'd like to thank all the division directors for your excellent work, and I'd like to thank Secretary Atkins for her willingness to step into the breach and assume her duties with her usual calm competence and help everybody be assured that the Secretary of State's office is continuing to function as it should and provide the services it needs. So my thanks to all of you. Thank you very much.
And I would echo those comments. Each and every one of us in one way or another are touched by the Secretary of State's office. And from my perception, the work is just excellent. So thank you. Any other comments, colleagues? Any questions? Any concerns? Is there any opposition to the motion before us? Seeing none, so moved. Senator Johnson, will you carry this in full Ways and Means?
I'd be pleased to, sir.
And on the Senate floor?
I'd be happy to.
Representative Taylor?
Happy to.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else before us on this one, Steve?
No.
All righty, so we're going to close the work session on House Bill 5036. Julie, are we good for me to close? All right, we're closed. And we're going to just stay in order here, colleagues. We're going to move to House Bill 3500 and open up a work session. Steve, what do we need to know?
Subcommittee members, House Bill 3500A relates to elector affiliation with political parties. The bill establishes the legislative task or the task force on expanding access to more voters in primary elections. This task force will consist of 17 members and is charged with analyzing and determining the best method or methods to expand access to more electors in primary elections. The task force is directed to submit its report no later than December 31st, 2015, and the task force itself sunsets on December 31st, 2016. Ms. McHugh spoke about the task for the fiscal impact of their first bill, Senate Bill 800. This is a very similar type of situation. There are some costs. We would expect them to be absorbable. There are no amendments.
Senator Whitsitt.
Excuse me?
I was just jumping the gun. Senator Johnson.
I have to apologize, co-chairs. I've been a little preoccupied recently and I haven't really studied this bill. I believe that it comes to us with a piece of its history that I don't know, and I will ask the professional staff to help me. It appears that if we're expanding access to more voters and we have set up a task force that is comprised of the traditional parties, how do we take into account the burgeoning ranks of the non-affiliated and the Independent Party of Oregon that now I think has achieved major party status? And perhaps you could, having not heard any of the testimony at the committee level, help me understand sort of where are we with making sure that in increasing voter access, we don't by accident disenfranchise one of the largest growing parties, because it may be that the R's and the D's don't want to appoint any minor parties or IPO.
So do we by chance have anyone out in the audience who wants to address that question?
appoints, which is
I'm watching everyone slink
so
down.
So president appoints somebody to represent them or some major political parties. Mr. Chair, I'm just showing Senator Johnson the makeup of the task force because I don't know if this addresses your concerns, Senator, but it looks like there's going to be appointments from all the caucus leaders, essentially, and each of them will appoint somebody who represents somebody who represents the interests of the major political parties, somebody who represents the interests of the minor political parties, and somebody who represents the interests of electors who are not affiliated with any political party. And it looks like all four caucus leaders appoint similar people. I may have lost track at some point, but it looks like that. And then there will be also somebody from Association of County Clerks and someone from the League of Women Voters. So I don't know if that addresses your concern, but that's what the task force representation looks like.
I just want to nuance this slightly further. There are a proliferation of minor parties right now, Working Family, Green. I can't even name them all. So would the expectation be that they all would have a seat at this table, or just one would one appointee would represent the interests of minor parties without the specifics of each of the parties?
It looks like there would be Mr. Bender.
The task force is established as a 17-member task force, and there is, as identified in the legislation, there would be one member to represent those interests specifically set aside for that purpose, that the president of the Senate is to appoint. There is also, one member to represent the interests of minor parties that the Senate minority leader is to appoint.
So how do we treat, follow up, Mr. Chair,
please.
How do we treat the capital I Independent Party of Oregon, given that they have achieved major party status?
So I don't know if I have an answer for that. But what I might share is that Representative Hoyle is the chief sponsor on this, and it might be worthwhile for us to grab her as she proceeds forward in this effort, because I don't know if I can answer these questions for her.
Would it be possible to take a little break to get that figured out and move through the rest of the agenda? I know how busy the agenda is.
That's a wonderful idea. So why don't we do this? That is a great idea. So why don't we recess on House Bill 3500?
Mr. Chair, just before you do that,
yes, Senator.
A quick tally on this group would indicate that the Secretary of State appoints one member, the presiding officers appoint 12 members, and the minority leaders appoint 4 members. There seems to be a significant disparity there. I just put that on the record.
So why don't we do this, colleagues? Let's take a recess on House Bill 3500. Julie, can you get a hold of Representative Hoyle's office and ask her if she would just come take a few minutes and share her thoughts on her bill?
We could actually close the work session and reopen it.
Okay. Would you prefer I close it? I hate to close because then I run the... We'll just keep it in recess.
No, I don't.
We'll keep it in recess for...
You can have multiple work sessions open simultaneously, right. So we'll just temporarily stop talking about that one and open a different work session.
So, Julie, if you'll just get a hold of Val and let her, or Representative Hoyle, and let her know we're interested in her coming down here. Colleagues, we're going to move and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3099 relating to state information technology.
Yeah, thank you. I assume they're in here, too.
Okay.
Great. All right. Welcome. Share with us what we need to know.
Certainly. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Sean McSpaden, Legislative Fiscal Office. House Bill 3099 relates to state information technology. The measure transfers certain duties, functions, and powers related to enterprise information technology and telecommunications planning, policy adoption, rulemaking, standard setting, and oversight from the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to the State Chief Information Officer. The measure provides that the state CIO is the primary information technology and telecommunications advisor to the governor, and that the state CIO's duties are specified by the governor. The measure also provides the state CIO with enhanced powers for oversight of information technology projects and procurements. The other matter before us today is the A13 amendment. The A13 amendment further transfers duties, responsibilities, and powers concerning operations and service delivery for enterprise IT and telecommunications from DAS to the state CIO. The A13 amendment also maintains existing Secretary of State and Oregon State Treasury independent authorities and exemptions from state CIO oversight, but does require SOS and Treasury to provide specified documents and reports to your legislative fiscal office and to work in collaboration with the state CIO to develop and adopt IT-related plans, policies, and standards for SOS and the Treasury that are, to the extent possible, compatible with the plans, policies, and standards adopted by the state CIO for all other state agencies within the executive branch. Lastly, the A13 amendment does maintain the current placement of the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council within the Oregon Business Development Department.
Perfect.
The Information Technology Subcommittee did hear this bill and the A13 amendment on Tuesday. It unanimously recommended adoption of the A13 amendment. The IT Subcommittee and LFO also recommend General Government Subcommittee adoption of the A13 amendment as well.
So, Madam Co-Chair, do you have a motion for me?
Do. I move that we adopt the A13 amendment to House Bill 3099.
Madam Co-Chair, move the adoption of the A13 amendments to House Bill 3099. Is there any discussion on this, colleagues? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so moved.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 3099 as amended to the full committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Perfect. Madam Co-Chair moves House Bill 3099 as amended to the full committee with the due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. A couple things. First of all, I want to thank Representative Nathanson and Senator Riley for their strong work on this bill and Mr. McFadden. Second, I think that this amendment addresses some concerns that have been held about how do you balance the fact that the Secretary of State and the Treasurer are independently elected constitutional officers and yet are getting funds from the state and these IT projects reflect on the state. I think this is a reasonable balance. I really appreciate everybody who worked to find this path forward so that we have some consistency about how we do large IT projects without interfering with the independent powers of these constitutionally elected officers. So I want to thank everybody who worked to craft this compromise.
Perfect. Is there any other comments, colleagues? Is there any opposition to the motion before us? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Nathanson, would you carry this to full?
I'd be happy to, yes.
Okay, and then Representative Holvey, would you like him to be the carrier on the House floor?
Thank you.
And then we're going to have Senator Riley be the carrier in the Senate, if that would be all right. All right, colleagues, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 3099. Julie, are we okay closing that? We're closed. And we're going to move on. We're going to now open up a work session on
55.
I'm going to 55. We're going to go to Senate Bill 55 relating to duck collection. That work session is open. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee. Senate Bill 55 requires that those state agencies which request people to voluntarily provide their Social Security number on documents related to a monetary obligation or transaction to include a notice on the document that the information may be used for debt collection purposes. It also requires the Department of Administrative Services establish procedures for the sharing of Social Security numbers between the state agencies, authorize the state agencies to charge a fee related to liquidated and delinquent debts accounts assigned to the Department of Revenue. It specifies the process for the proposal and acceptance of offers of compromise for the settlement of debt, requires Department of Administrative Services to adopt policies relating to state agency debt collection, and to provide training and technical assistance to state agencies on debt collection processes. The measure specifies this information be included in the state agent report that is submitted to LFO each year and requires Department of Administrative Services to charge agencies for their share of the cost of administering the program. There are, for the work session today, there are actually five recommended amendments for this bill, and the LFO recommends that you include all five of those amendments and move them to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. So to do this, what we're going to do is we're going to go through each one of these amendments one at a time, and I'm going to give you a very brief synopsis of what the amendment does, and then we just need a motion for each amendment and then a final motion to move all of the amendments into the bill. So The Dash A8 amendment adds additional information that must be reported to the LFO and that must be included in the annual report that's produced by LFO on liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable.
Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am ready for
Thank
a motion.
Thank you. I move to amend Senate Bill 55 with the Dash A8 amendments.
So Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash A8 amendments to Senate Bill 55. Colleagues, is there any discussion on this motion? Is there any opposition? Seeing no opposition, they are moved.
Okay, moving on to Dash A9 amendment, adds additional requirements for the Department of Administrative Services, including monitoring the state agency debt collection functions to improve collections, developing performance standards for state debt collection, working with agencies to improve the quality and value of information that is included in the annual state agency report that's submitted to LFO, and the submission of an annual management report to the Legislative Assembly that identifies issues and significant trends in state agency debt collection practices and evaluates agency effort in improving collections.
How about if you make a motion and I do a moving A9?
There it is.
Up there,
he's
back.
We're back. Madam Co-Chair, I believe you have a motion before
us. I do
us.
Indeed. Thank you so much. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 55.
Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 55. Colleagues, is there any discussion on these? On this? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so moved.
The A10 amendments add language clarifying how the measure applies to the judicial branch, the Secretary of State, and the State Treasurer.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend Senate Bill 55 with the Dash A10 amendments.
Yes.
Hang tight. Technical difficulties.
Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash A10.
We're up to the tens.
All right. To Senate Bill 55, is there any discussion on this, colleagues? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so approved.
The Dash A12 amendments add language to include semi-independent agencies, plus the Oregon Tourism Commission, the Oregon Film and Video Office, the Travel Information Council, the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon Foundation, the Oregon Corrections Enterprise, Oregon Health Science Universities, the State Accident Insurance Fund, and the Oregon Utility Notification Center and the public universities to the entities required to report on liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable to the LFO.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend Senate Bill 55 with the Dash A12 amendments.
Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash A12 amendments to Senate Bill 55. Colleagues, any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved.
Your final amendment is actually from the LFO, and what this does, this establishes a other funds expenditure limitation for the Department of Administrative Services in the amount of $660,474 to accomplish the tasks that are required of them under this bill. That amount of money is to fund three positions, two of them ongoing positions and one of them a limited duration position for the upcoming biennium.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend Senate Bill 55 with the Dash A13s.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash A13s to Senate Bill 55. Is there any discussion, colleagues? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 55 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended by the Dash A8, A9, A10, A12, and A13 amendments.
All right. Madam Co-Chair moves Senate Bill 55 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended by the A8, A9, A10, A12, and A13 amendments. Any discussion, colleagues? Yes, Representative Collins.
Thank you. I want to share my appreciation for debt collections. This is my 11th year in this job, and over the years, there's been several times when we have reports that it's like, you haven't done this, and it's a practical step, and collecting our debts is going to be a great investment.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
I'm just up for thanking a lot of people these days. It's kind of where I'm at. I'm a lot of gratitude. We had two of our committee members work very, very hard on this, Senator Whitsitt and Representative Taylor. Representative Taylor, I think you're kind of a redshirt freshman. You're kind of a ringer on this issue, given your background in the Audits Division. But you really have stepped up to the plate extraordinarily well on this issue, and I'm very grateful to you. And as Senator Whitsitt has pointed out, this issue has come up how many times in the past umpteen years, and it looks as if we're finally getting something done. And I want to thank everybody from the Institute for Government Modernization, I don't think I said that quite right, but you know who I mean, to the folks in LFO and all the different offices certainly to Mr. Stamer, because this is a tough, tough bill, and it's going to make a big difference for debt collection in the state. So yay, team.
And I would echo that, Representative.
Thank you. So now I also want to thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward and Chair Smith. I want to thank the Audits Division and especially Jamie Rawls. She is one of the stars of the Audits Division, and she's really the meat behind Senate Bill 55. So, and I really appreciate it. I know how hard it is to do audits and then have them fall on deaf ears. And this time it didn't happen. So,
they just look like auditors. Don't they look like auditors?
They do not look.
They do.
What does an auditor look like?
You can tell they're numbers people. Can you see that? Okay.
That's a compliment.
It is I'm a numbers person. It's a huge compliment.
So,
all right.
Thank you. All right.
Any other comments, colleagues? Any opposition to the bill before us? Seeing none, so approved. So, Senator Whitson, I'm going to ask you to carry this in full Ways and Means. Okay. Would that be all right? Yep. And on the Senate floor, Representative Taylor, will you take this on the floor?
Yes, and Representative Gomberg would like to be a co-carrier with me. He's worked on debt issues for years, and I said yes.
Perfect. I think we've got that all worked out. All righty.
Thank you, Mr. Stamer. Really appreciate it.
I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 55. And again, colleagues, great job on that. Really, really appreciate it. Okay. We are going to move to House Bill 3525 and open up a work session. What do we need to know on this?
Chair Smith, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 3525 relates to obstructing governmental administration. The bill creates the 12-member task force on immigration consultant fraud, required to study violations by immigration consultants and the obstruction of persons trying to report violations of immigration consultants. The task force is directed to report back to the legislature by September 15, 2015. The Oregon Advocacy Commission is directed to provide staff support for the task force. The task force is anticipated to meet three times between passage of the bill and the September reporting date. The Advocacy Commission anticipates a minimal fiscal impact as a result of staffing the task force, and the commission notes that further duties beyond the reporting date are not specified in the measure. There are no amendments.
All righty. Okay. Colleagues, do we have any questions on this?
Yeah, I do.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. I'm not sure why we're doing this bill at all. I know that this is not a policy committee, but we passed a law that requires these individuals to be members of the bar. It reads, it shall be a violation of ORS 9.160 for any person to engage in the business or act in the capacity of an immigrant consultant in this state for compensation unless the person is an active member of the Oregon State Bar. That's pretty clear. So why are we creating a task force to do what?
If I may,
help me,
Chair.
Please,
Madam Co-Chair.
I understand your question and concern, Senator. My understanding from the testimony that we heard and other conversations I've had with advocates about this bill outside of this room relate to the fact that there's not a lot of information in the immigrant community about who qualifies and who doesn't, and there's a lot of false advertising. And then people who try to report these people are actually intimidated by people who are perpetrating these kinds of fraud by calling themselves notarios publicos. And so this is designed to figure out ways to get the right information out to the immigration community, give them the resources to report this, and then to make it clear to those who are working on violating, who are trying to violate the law that you just cited, that this will not be acceptable. It's a short-term fix thing to do to address a significant problem where immigrants who are trying to follow the law and work on their immigration status appropriately are being fleeced, frankly, and their work to become completely in line has been stymied in a lot of cases, and the bar can't handle this in the same way that it can handle other issues, similar issues. It's just too big a problem.
Please follow up.
This bill in no way alters or seeks to amend the current law.
No, sir. It's solely a task force.
That's all I need to know. Thank you.
Yep.
All righty. Are we going to be okay on the Senate side on votes on this?
I am okay.
All right. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Co-Chair moves House Bill 3525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, colleagues?
No.
Any concerns? Are we good? All right. Seeing no concerns, we're going to move forward.
I'm always concerned.
I choose my words a little more carefully. I need a carrier on this. Madam Co-Chair, you do that for us. Would you
Happy
do it full and to the floor?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll
Representative
Kump,
would you take this to the floor? Okay, perfect. All righty, so I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3525. Can I close this one, Bill, first? All right, we're good on that? Nope. Okay. Yeah. I have to tell you a story very quickly before we go to recess. I was once in a committee hearing with about 36 hours left before Siney died, and the chair was hearing a bill that was very controversial and made the mistake of saying, I am going to adjourn, and hit it down. At which point, a very experienced Republican who's now co-chair of a Ways and Means Committee heard adjourn, got up, and got out of there and ended up denying a quorum. And next thing you know, Ramona is chasing this person down saying, you will get back in there. So that's why I'm very careful on closing versus recess versus everything else. So,
have it down.
Yeah. Needless to say, it wasn't my best day.
Well, I was going to say, I wonder who that might have been.
Okay, so are we going to go to 2270 now?
We can do that.
Okay, so we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 227 relating to seismic resilience planning. And I see we have Representative Boone back there with
patiently
us.
Patiently waiting.
Have you been back there the whole time?
I have. I thought you were smiling at me.
Will you forgive me? I'm so sorry.
No. No, I'm kidding.
This kind lady, I didn't see until you popped out.
So funny. I couldn't see you for about 2 weeks now. I'm used to this. It's okay.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you. And for the record, Deborah Boone has District 32. And I've been working with the governor's office on resilience issues for quite some time. And they have recently in the last year, and they've come before you already once, I think, to get authorization to do a HUD grant that has to do with resilience planning. And as we're working together, this bill, 2270, implements a policy advisor for resilience in the governor's office. And there's a companion bill, Senate Bill 808, which is the resilience plan sort of part two, dealing with the human effects of a mass disaster. And so their grant is about resilience, too. So we thought, she said, if your bill had an emergency clause on it, it would be perfect in case we can conjoin them and the policy advisor can become, you know, part of this whole thing. It would work better together. So I asked Representative Reed, because it's his bill, and he didn't mind at all. Oh, that was fine. We thought it was kind of ironic because there's been a lot of talk about all the bills with emergency clauses that don't seem to be true emergencies. But since this has to do with emergency funding and disaster planning and all that, it's fitting. Doesn't change anything. It just makes it easy to implement. And the good news is they should find out within the next 2 weeks or so if they're successful. And they're just this close to the end right now. So
perfect.
It would just, it's sort of an enabling thing. It will help if possible.
Perfect. So, Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move. Sorry, Ms. McKeon.
I got out front of you.
Yes. Yeah. Need to be clear that the dash twos being proposed were posted at 1:15, so we cannot take action on the dash twos until 2:15.
So, if I would have been paying attention, that was the direction you folks were sharing with me.
Can we have approval of the dash twos as well as the dash ones, Ms. McHugh?
You do.
So, okay. Let's do this, colleagues. Rather than move this in pieces, I'm going to ask that we recess for 10 minutes. And at 2:15, we're going to come back, at which point I think Co-Chair Devlin's going to come join us. So we're going to recess House Bill 2270. We're in recess on House Bill 3500, and our subcommittee is in recess for 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry. So we're out of recess. We're coming out of recess on House Bill 2270A. I need a motion. Who can give me a motion? Who can move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2270? Rep Taylor, would you move the dash one amendments?
Want me to read the...
Let's do that. There you go. Let's do that.
All right. This bill creates the Office of State Resilience Officer within the Office of the Governor to direct, implement, and coordinate seismic safety and resilience goal setting and state agency planning and preparation for this purpose. The Office of the Governor anticipates that they would need two staff to implement the bill, a program manager G to serve as a state resilience officer, and an executive support specialist 2 to provide assistance to the officer. The cost for the positions and associated services and supplies is estimated to be $304,653 in 2015-17, assuming a start date of January 1, 2016. The cost will increase to $406,203 in 2017-19, when the positions would be funded for the full biennium. The bill also specifies that both the legislative and judicial branches will identify an individual to monitor the effectiveness of seismic safety and resilience planning for the respective branches. Both branches will be able to absorb this function within their current budgets and staffing levels.
Perfect. And Representative Taylor, will you move adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 2270?
I move to Dash 1, did you say?
All you have to do is say yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Representative Taylor moves adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 2270. Colleagues, is there any discussion on this? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Taylor, would you move House Bill 2270 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as modified by the Dash 1 Amendment?
Yes.
Yes?
Dash 2.
Dash 2. Dash 2. Good catch. So we're going to move House Bill 2270 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as modified by the Dash 2 Amendments, but first we need to hear the Dash 2 Amendments. So if we have the Dash 2 Amendments before us.
Let me pull those up.
This is what rookie budget chairs do. See, we don't pass these policy stuff, so we have our little script.
Okay.
When we have to go off script, we get in trouble.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 2 Amendments add an emergency clause to House Bill 2270.
All right. Okay.
So do we need the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s?
We've already adopted the Dash 1s.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, I was out in the hall.
Nope, so. You're good. Okay. So, Madam Co-Chair, will you move the Dash 2 Amendments?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Apologies for being out of the room. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 Amendments to House Bill 2270.
All right, perfect. So, Madam Co-Chair moves the Dash 2 Amendments to House Bill 2270. We've already got the Dash 1s adopted, so now we just need a final motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2270 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as modified by the Dash 1 and Dash 2 Amendments.
Perfect. So Madam Co-Chair moves House Bill 2270 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as modified by the Dash 1 and Dash 2 Amendments. Any discussion on this, colleagues? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. So Senator Johnson, if you'd carry this in full Ways and
sure.
Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monis Anderson is going to carry this on the Senate floor, and Representative Boone, if you'll carry it on the House floor.
I'd be happy to. Cindy Robert reminded me that the architects worked long and hard with Senator Boquist, so either of those two might be good.
What's your preference?
How about Senator Boquist?
Let's go with Senator Boquist.
Senator Monis Anderson would probably carry the other.
All right, so that's what we're doing. Senator Johnson in full, Boquist in the Senate floor, and Representative Boone on the House floor. All righty, before I get in more trouble on this, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2270. Are we okay with that? Okay, we're closing that. And colleagues, we're in recess, and we're going to come out of recess on House Bill 3500. So if we could bring that bill up here really quick. Steve, could you give us an overview one more time on this bill?
Senator Johnson. Certainly, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, they don't count. It won't count.
Oh. All right. I'll leave right after I make a statement.
Okay.
As a reminder, Senate Bill 3500 creates the Task Force on Expanding Access to More Voters in Primary Elections, a 17-member task force charged with analyzing and determining the best method to access more electors in primary elections.
All righty, perfect. And so why don't we do this? Madam Co-Chair, if you would make a motion.
Sure, I'm just trying to pull up the right work session papers. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3500A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Perfect. Senator Johnson, do you have a thought for us?
I do, because we're going to exercise the time-honored tradition of rolling a member, and I will step out in order to avoid quorum issues. I object to this bill. This bill, I think, ignores the fact that the Independent Party, which I have had my issues with, but the Independent Party is a ballot-qualified major political party. It's got more than 100,000 members. They've opened up their primary. And I just don't see that this bill meets the fundamental tests of fairness and equity. I am concerned about the composition of the task force. And I am concerned that the Independent Party, that now is in the unique position of being a newly qualified major political party, seems to be ignored in this process. And with that, I will excuse myself because I cannot support this bill. I won't support it here. I won't support it on the floor. And Senator Devlin will cast my vote. No, he won't. He'll cast a vote in opposition to where I am. I think this is bad policy.
Senator, we appreciate you. All right. We have a motion before us. Representative Comp.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I too have the same concerns as our good Senator Johnson. The makeup of this task force does not seem balanced, and I will.
We have enough votes to.
Okay, I'll be a no vote then here.
Alrighty. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just reiterate the comments of my colleague, Senator Johnson. Certainly the Independent Party issue is a major oversight in the bill, in my opinion. And whether we have a Democrat majority or a Republican majority, 12-4, advantage to the party in power in a task force makes no sense to me, so I'll be a no.
All righty. Any other comments, colleagues? All righty. We're going to go to a vote here. Those who are in opposition, please signify. We've got Representative Comp and Senator Whitsett. Those in support, I guess, are Representative Taylor, Representative Nathanson, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Stower Hayward, and Co-Chair Devlin. Julie, are we good with that? We got the vote count? All righty. Colleagues, House Bill 3500 has passed. Let's see, who should we have carry this? I guess I'll carry this in full Ways and Means. Senator, do you have any recommendations for the House and Senate floor?
Well, I think it's Representative Hoyle.
Hoyle?
Yeah.
Okay.
And on the Senate, Senator Johnson. I don't know. In terms of, I would guess probably since it's an elections-related issue, we'd give Senator Rosenbaum the chance to either she would carry it or someone else of her selection would carry it.
Okay, so for in full Ways and Means, I'm going to ask Representative Nathanson to carry this. If Mr. Co-Chair, at some point you need to change that, let me know, and I'm more than willing.
No, that's fine. I was just, Mr. Co-Chair, you were asking for a carrier for the Senate floor, yeah. And I think I would probably leave that up to the chair of the Senate Rules Committee unless Senator Steiner Hayward wanted to carry.
I think I'll take a pass on this one. Thank you.
Okay.
Unless my co-chair would like me to, in which case I will be happy to accede.
I think.
We'll
I'm happy to wait
to
see Senator Rosenbaum's decision on who carries it.
Yeah, okay. We'll let her deal with that.
And we'll let Representative Hoyle carry it on the House floor. Representative Nathanson,
in full,
if you would. All right, okay. All righty. Any other issues on House Bill 3500? Okay, so I'm going to close that work session. Colleagues, I want you to know we've gotten through a huge agenda today, and we made it 4 minutes to our time. So I want to thank you for all the work you've done today. I appreciate all you've done. Julie, appreciate you. Steve, appreciate all you do. Mr. Co-Chair, thanks for coming and keeping us in line. And with all that said, we are going to adjourn
Richard,
for the day.
Richard, can I talk to you for a minute, please?
Yeah.
Talk to you for a minute, please.
Yeah.
The day.
Richard.